Hey, what's up, guys? You're now listening to Devo with Uncle Theo. Today is day 113, and we're going to cover 1 Kings chapter 5 through 7. Last time we left off, we've seen the development of Solomon. Remember, we ran into what theologians call the binary problem. Solomon was just black and white, and it was either this or that. Kill him, let him live. It's like he couldn't pick a option C or choose amongst multiple options. And God comes to him, and in the Hebrew, it says, "What should you ask me for, Solomon?" Not like a genie rubbing on a lamp saying, "Hey, what do you want from me, Solomon?" No, he said, "What should you ask from me?" And Solomon says, "I need a listening heart. I need a lay Shema. I need a listening heart." And that was so beautiful. We picked that up. It's not just wisdom. It's a heart that listens to Yahweh. And that's why he has wisdom. That's why he's able to rule the way he does. And this leads us into chapter 5. Solomon is about to build the temple that David couldn't build. And we're about to see the development of that. And see, this is interesting because remember, when we were in Exodus, we saw the instructions for the tabernacle and the building of the tabernacle. So in your head, think Exodus, but think now we have a permanent tabernacle and it'll be called the temple. And so that's the language we're about to get now. Solomon is about to start talking with other kings and nations and bringing in material to start building the temple. And that's what we're about to catch today in chapter 5. Listen to this. "Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon when he heard that they had anointed him king in the place of his father, for Hiram always loved David. And Solomon sent word to Hiram, 'You know that David, my father, cannot build a house for the name of the Lord his God because of the warfare with which his enemies surrounded him until the Lord put them under the soles of his feet. But now the Lord, my God, has given me rest on every side.'" You hear that? There's our theme, rest. Remember, we're always going back to Eden. God is on a mission to fix this problem from the beginning. We're going back to Sabbath, and it says that there is neither adversary nor misfortune. "And so I intend to build a house for the name of the Lord, my God, as the Lord said to David, my father, 'Your son, whom I shall set on your throne in your place, shall build a house for my name.'" Now here it is. "Now, therefore, command that cedar of Lebanon be cut for me, and my servants will join your servants, and I will pay you for your servants such wages as you set. For you know that there is no one among you who knows how to cut timber like the Sidonian." And as soon as Hiram heard the words of Solomon, he rejoiced greatly and said, "Blessed be the Lord this day, who has given to David a wise son to be over this great people." And Hiram sent to Solomon saying, "I have heard the message that you have sent me. I am ready to do all that you desire." And so they start to barter and trade. He says, "I'll give you cedar and cypress timber. We'll bring it down the Sea of Lebanon. We'll make it to rafts to go by sea." So Hiram supplies Solomon with all the timber of cedar and cypress that he desired, while Solomon gave Hiram 20 cores of wheat as food for his household, and 20 cores of beaten oil. Solomon gave this to Hiram year by year, and the Lord gave Solomon wisdom. So Solomon drafts a labor force. In verse 13, the number is 30,000 men, and he sent them to Lebanon, 10,000 a month. In verse 15, Solomon also had 70,000 burden bearers and 80,000 stone cutters in the hill country, besides Solomon's 3,300 chief officers who were over the work, who had charge of the people who carried on the work. So they're setting out to build a temple. And we get something very huge as we walk into chapter 6. In verse 1, I know I haven't talked about dates a lot because I didn't want to get too technical. My goal is to stay 30,000 feet up and give you the plain sense of all of these chapters. And maybe each year, if we continue to do these, we can go deeper and deeper every year. But I do need to give you this date because this will be helpful for you. Now, because if we have this date right here, it'll unlock all of our other dates. So listen to me closely in 1 Kings chapter 6. It says, in the 480th year after the people of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Zeal, which is the second month, he began to build the house of the Lord. Okay, we get a date here. Now you may say, Theo, I didn't see a date. This date is 966. And I'm gonna tell you, how we got this date. You get this date from history. Everybody knows that the temple was built in 966 BC. It doesn't matter if you're a Christian scholar or a secular scholar. It's universally agreed upon that this is the date based on historical study. Now, this helps us tremendously. You know why? Because look at what it says in verse 1. It says 480 years after the people came out of the land of Egypt. Wow. All we have to do is add 966 to 480, and it'll give us the time that the people were in Egypt. And so when you add those two numbers together, what do you get? 1446 BC. So that is the time of our Exodus. And so that's how I could give you that detailed analysis about who was the Pharaoh during the time of the Exodus because of this date. I could tell you it wasn't the Pharaoh of Ramses. He came much later. So we shouldn't get our theology from the Prince of Egypt, the Disney movie. We should get it from scripture. And we have a lady by the name of Hatshepsut who was around during this time, and all of these dates match up. And I hadn't talked about this before, but now you can know the law, the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible were written around 1400 BC. And so you have your date of the first five books of the Bible. You have your date when the temple was built, and now we can start to build those things out. I wanted to show you how most scholars get to the dating of a lot of the books. This is your anchor date. So don't ever forget that. Memorize 1 Kings 6:1. It helps you with pretty much all the dating of the Bible backwards and forward. So verse 2, the temple that Solomon built for the Lord was 60 cubits long, 20 wide, and 30 high. The portico at the front of the main hall of the temple extended the width of the temple, that is 20 cubits, and projected 10 cubits from the front of the temple. So the temple that Solomon builds is patterned after the tabernacle. And there are three major areas. There's the most holy place, there's the holy place, and there's the outer courtyard. And so the temple is like a cube shape, and the dimensions of the temple are double those of the tabernacle. So this thing is much bigger. You remember the scale I gave you for the tabernacle that was bigger than the official basketball court? Think bigger now. And listen to verse 11. It says, the word of the Lord came to Solomon. As for this temple you are building, if you follow my decrees, observe my laws, and keep my commands and obey them, I will fulfill through you the promise I gave to David, your father. And I will live among the Israelites and will not abandon my people. So you see, you hear that language is conditional. That language is bilateral. And that's the language of the Mosaic covenant. Remember, if you do this, I will do this, which wasn't the language of the Davidic covenant, which wasn't the language of the Noahic covenant or the Abrahamic covenant. But you see that language still here of the Mosaic covenant. So the people must be obedient for God to be there. If not, Ichabod, remember that in Samuel, the glory will depart and the tabernacle can get taken. Or think about it this way, or the temple can get destroyed. And you know the story, it will happen. So you get the dimensions for the most holy place in verse 16. It says he partitioned off 20 cubits at the rear of the temple with cedar boards from floor to ceiling to form within the temple, the inner sanctuary, the most holy place. In verse 19, he prepared the inner sanctuary within the temple to set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 wide, and 20 high. He overlaid the inside with pure gold, and he also overlaid the altar of cedar. Solomon covered the inside of the temple with pure gold, and he extended gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary, which was overlaid with gold. And so remember our study, why so much gold? The gold represents the glory of God. a holy person is here. This is the place where God dwells, and he dwells in the holies of holy. And now you have to walk up there to get there, which means what? God's abode is above you, his loftiness, his majesty, and his holiness. God is holy. You have to get up to God because he's holy. He's not going to come down and descend down to your standard and your preferences. You have to come up to his. And obviously, you need help with that, which is why God trains them how to do this. Look at verse 23. You'll have two cherubim, the angels. Where do we see that from? I told you, Genesis. God is taking them back to Eden. The temple is starting to look like paradise. You get it now? I'm glad you're picking this up. This is the reason. This is the point. We're getting close to the kingdom, true paradise. And that closes the chapter out. And it tells us at the end of the chapter, the temple was finished in all its details according to its specification. He had spent 7 years building it. But wait a minute. Look at chapter 7, verse 1. It took Solomon 13 years, however, to complete the construction of his palace. You hear that interruption? In the middle of building a temple, what is Solomon doing? He builds his own house. And that's curious. And that's interesting. Like, why bother to put that right in the middle of the discussion of the temple? And sure, he needs a house. He's a king. He has a big family. He needs to build a house. But this is the author showing you. This is a red flag. Solomon builds his house in the middle of building the temple, and it almost takes double to build his own house than it takes to build God's house. Remember how the chapter ends? It took 7 years to build God's house. It takes Solomon 13 years to build his own house. And so you got to pick up on things like that. Those are red flags. We've already seen he married an Egyptian woman. You remember that in chapter 3? Then he started multiplying horses, and now he has a big house. These are red flags, but we're not done. Let's keep paying attention. The rest of chapter 7 resumes and continues to talk about the construction of the temple. Like in verse 21, you have two pillars in the portico of the temple, and one of the pillars was named Jachin, and the other one was named Boaz. And so you have these two temples which emphasize the seed, that the seed will be king. One shows strength and the other shows stability, which this points to God's promise, which is what both of their names mean. And there's a bronze bowl, and it holds up to 12,000 gallons of water, and it stood on 12 oxen. What is that to show? That the 12 tribes are to carry the world back to Eden. They are to be an evangelistic nation. They are to return the world back to paradise. They are to make that international impact that we're talking about. But you also have to remember that these bowls are for cleansing and cleaning you up. You have to be clean to seek God and get back to Eden, to get back to paradise. You must be holy. You must be clean. And so God is providing means, symbolically, remember, to clean them up. And only certain people could partake in this. You had to have worship leaders and people who worship. And see, that is the mystery with the church. When the wall is torn down, we get extra benefit. You had to go through worship leaders during this time. Now you get to go to God yourself. Everyone gets close to God in salvation and in the church. That's why this is so huge. When you see that we had to go through worship leaders back then, it blows your mind. And in chapter 7, there are also sacrifices for sin as well. You can never get back to Eden without atonement. You can never have Eden without dealing with your sin. Chapter 7, verse 48 and 49, the bread of presence comes back up. The lampstands made of pure gold are back here. And it says in 51, when all the work King Solomon had done for the temple of the Lord was finished, he brought in the things his father David had dedicated, the silver and gold and the furnishing, and he placed them in the treasuries of the Lord's temple. And there you have it. all the studying we've been doing about the tabernacle, we now have a permanent place of worship. And we have a king that is taking us to the golden ages. This is as good as it gets. He's taking the conquering that David has done through war. He has a time of peace because his name is what? In Hebrew, Shlomo, which we know Solomon, which means peace. And so in your mind, it should have been, is this our Prince of Peace? His name means peace. He's brought us peace. But we have tension because we see so many red flags in him. Is he our guy? You know the answer. He's not our guy. But what does he do? He winnows it down further. We're getting closer and closer, guys. We're looking for him, and we've almost found him. But it's going to get bad before it gets better. Let's stay tuned and keep tracking through the King. Enjoying this with you guys. You take care. Catch you tomorrow.